access number 29039, Mr. Alan Pollock, reel 24. Now, so you went off and doing these various raids, dropping leaflets and toilet rolls over various areas.
Yes,
this all
right.
Occurred on the 1st of April.
Yeah, it was really just for morale as much as anything. And as I say, it was quite a good training exercise. But then quite quickly after that sortie, the poor old station commander was getting these calls from round the, particularly I think from Wattisham, you know, which was in theory probably the most operational base there. And the station commander there had got the hump a bit with it, these sort of leaflets being dropped. And I knew Brian Walton, Wally Walton, was, you know, a good, safe, extremely competent pilot, almost exceptional, if not exceptional, in his weapons capability. And very quickly we had to stop that, which was fair enough in a way, but we were a bit surprised. But what from Wattisham's point of view and their station commanders, they'd got an AOC's inspection the following day, and that was probably partly why they were a bit had got a bit of a hump about it. But we did rather see red on that. And also that whole week from then onwards, there was very little at all in the press, if anything. It was very low key, I think, until the Friday evening when they had the royal dinner. And as I say, there were virtually no flypasts, even though now in the official history of the Royal Air Force, it does say parades and flypasts were held throughout the Royal Air Force, which is an interesting variation, really, on what actually had been planned to happen and what did happen. Even the Royal Air Force News, that was the other intriguing thing. I can remember the Royal Air Force News, strangely, had a photo of three jet provosts overflying, or four jet provosts overflying low over the college. And I was convinced, rightly or wrongly, that it was the same photograph that was about 3 years, well, more than that, must be even older than that, that I'd been involved in myself. And I thought it was slightly sad on the 50th anniversary of an operational outfit like the Royal Air Force that they'd used the training element there to highlight rather than the operational side. Now, on the Thursday, we were tasked to go down, five of us, which was the boss and Mike Webb, the other flight commander, myself, and David Ainge and Barry Horton were the four others, to Tangmere. And we were invited back to Tangmere, really, because they were celebrating the freedom of the city of Chichester. And the AOC was down there, who was Mickey Martin, the Dambuster Martin from 617 Squadron, the highly decorated bomber guy who was largely taught Cheshire, he said, how to low fly. That was Cheshire's words, not the other way around. And we were invited down to that party, and also at whenever it was, the march past in Chichester, it was coordinated for us to fly past to the minute when the salute was there, or to the second, really. And Mike Webb, I could tell, was spot on time over the top of Chichester. And then we flew round Arundel Castle, I can remember, where the Duke of Norfolk was going to be there that evening at any rate. And I half thought the Duke of Richmond and Gordon was there, but I could be wrong about that. But I half thought there were two Royal Dukes at the party that night at Tangmere. And the strange thing was that the VIPs did not quite know why they were there. In other words, they had to do with the 50th anniversary. And that came as a bit of a surprise to me. And even the AOC's wife, she wasn't Lady Martin by then, but Mickey Martin's wife, and they'd obviously been at least 35 or 40 minutes in the car from Odeon, and she also did not seem to know it was the 50th anniversary of the Royal Air Force that week. And rightly or wrongly, and partly for obvious reasons, because if you look on a map, if you draw a line between Tangmere and West Raynham, right in the middle is London. And I suppose that idea went through my head. The other aspect was I'd had a very heavy cold, and I was given some drugs that were supposed to sort my cold out so that I could go down there and fly. And I was given some by the civil people at a chemist, and some by those were antihistamines, and I was given some by the RAF medic, splendid bloke, squadron leader Brown, I think it was his name, triaminix. But between them both, they were supposed to make me sleepy, these things, but the strange thing was I had what's called, or whatever it is, a reverse reaction, or that, and in those days there were no such thing as side effects. It was always your problem if you had a side reaction to drugs. From making me sleepy, it was quite the reverse, because I found that I was not sleeping that well when I went down to Tangmere. And yes, one of the elements later, while perhaps I wasn't court-martialed, I mean, one of the elements was the fact that there were royalty down there. They didn't know about the 50th anniversary, and that also this business of the actual drugs, which was rather covered up, I thought, later. But that night, the other strange thing, which I've never written about, because I did write up within 2 or 3 months when it was all vividly in my head, and something that was published on the fly past over.
Hang on, they still don't know what you've done. So yeah. But remember, these people have no idea what's happening. So.
Yeah. Well,
so you're explaining.
That, well, that, okay. I'd taken down with me to Tangmere Jimmy Beadle's book, and in fact, partly because the party finished, I think, about 1:30, and then something very strange happened at about 3 o'clock or so. I woke up, and the only time I've never spoken to anybody about this or written about it, although I did subsequently write about the whole 50th anniversary events. And it sounds completely daft, but it's completely true, that I had this strange, weird feeling in my bedroom of evil. It's the only time it's ever happened to me in my life, and it was for a very short time, I think probably 5 to 10 minutes, and it was really very strange. But I only ever realised later that exactly at that time, believe it or not, that was when Martin Luther King was assassinated, which the following day, quite correctly, there was an international, an awful lot of discussion about that. I woke up that morning with very early, because a helicopter came over, and I think it was linked with perhaps one of the squadron boaters that we had being on top of the flagpole. And also, there was a slight altercation later with Spike Jones and myself, because we always had probably did not know that the way that the squadron, that I insisted that when we went anywhere, where we deployed and that our flying time was so important that we had to get aircraft back for people to fly. And I felt very strongly that we'd had the privilege of having the party down there, and that it was our duty in a way to get the aircraft back to West Raynham so that we could fly more sorties. And the other standard arrangement we had was that we split the leadership of sorties up, so that you'd get high value on each sortie, so that if there were two legs or a there and back, as there was with Tangmere, that there'd be a change of leadership, and that the to get the high value sortie on the way back, rather than just to drift back and achieve nothing, that somebody else would have had the lead on the way back to do the planning. And that could have been the boss, or it could have been myself, or it could have been one of the other two, the less experienced guys, David Ainge and Barry Horton, and I can remember really getting up and trying to get the others more interested, but I think they'd been told probably by the boss, and it was that they were going to leave later. But the other factor which affected later events was there was a fog at West Raynham. There was an advection fog.
Now, what day is this? What's the date?
It's the Friday, so we're now Friday morning. That we'd done the fly past on the Thursday of, and that was the Thursday. The 4th was down at Tangmere, and this was the early morning of the fifth. But I lay on the grass down there. I'd been down to do the Met. I'd been down to see that the aircraft were all right, and in fact, the idea was already, I suppose, germinating in my head, because I can remember going into one of the airmen's crew room there in the old famous old huts which are in all the photos for Battle of Britain, the old wooden huts just by the pan there at Tangmere, and I asked if anybody there had got an AA book, and I opened up the middle, and people will remember perhaps the old AA book, the little squiggly map of the central London, and it was distinctly a complete turn off, really, because I mean it was worse than useless, and in fact it really made one wonder that it was probably not a very sensible thing to do at any rate. But I'd got my map and very quickly put a route on it, and by the time that the weather improved. And in fact, the other strange thing was that, and again, the weather there was splendid, and the others hadn't come down, and I was literally lying out in the grass there.
So the fog had cleared.
But the fog was at West Raynham,
right,
and we couldn't have taken off any rate. That was a strange aspect of it all. And as I lay down there, half snoozing. A strange thing happened when I could actually seemingly almost smell and hear. And again, this never happened at all the rest of my life. The lovely smell of castor oil, of those rotary engines that were down there. And it was almost as though there'd been a slight time slip. But that's an interesting side effect. But when the others came down, the boss was a bit shirty with me. We had a kind of altercation there between us, and in a strange way I think that almost made me more determined to go ahead, that it was worthwhile flying over London to get court-martialed. And what I haven't mentioned was, and it's easy to forget now, but 1968 at the beginning of April then, the national morale was really at rock bottom post-war in the Wilson era. But we'd had the devaluation, the TSR-2 had been cancelled, and other aircraft programs, the 681 had gone, and the 1154, the supersonic Harrier development had gone for a chop, and national morale really was at rock bottom. Now, the problem I had, I was number four going off, and the boss was, as a singleton, was going back separately, and he was behind me. And all I had really in my mind was, without upsetting the others in any way, was to get away from them without their knowing what had happened. And when we got airborne, I was number four. That was for mating on number three, the second pair down the runway to take off. And after me, sort of looking up my jet pipe, so to speak, was the number five as a singleton. And as soon as Spike Jones turned round just to say goodbye to the airfield with a low-level run, I realised that he was banked away and that he was involved in, you know, the next 20 seconds of, or 35, 40 seconds of positioning himself to do a low run over the airfield. The others were turning starboard, and I realised I could just slip away to the left and stay down very low level and turned north and then didn't say anything for a minute and a half, and I don't think they'd noticed actually during that time. And then when they started chatting, I was still listening to them, and I just went speechless, which really, you had a speechless code, one for yes, two for no, and very quickly I was able to tell that I'd lost contact with them and that I'd be going back independently. So, in other words, that was to make it easy for Mike Webb, who had the other two with him, and they just went back to West Raynham. I headed north really at low level and at the normal speed of, I think, 4:20 to start with. Flew over Dunsfold, the home of the Harrier, or the Hunter really then in those days, and the Kestrel, the Harriers were just beginning then, the home of the Hunter, so to speak, and just flew north. And another 3 minutes, it was, I decided that the lakes just near London Airport were a good IP point, and just turned on that over Richmond Park and then let down over the river, which was a safe way that I thought to just follow the river down, which I did, over the various bridges.
Over the bridges?
Yeah, Wandsworth Bridge, Battersea Bridge, Chelsea Bridge, Vauxhall Bridge, and then Millbank Tower was there, and Lambeth Bridge, and there was Westminster, and it was an incredible sight really, and it was really like a toy town thing, viewing it from a Hunter. And I was slightly annoyed really. I went over three times over the Houses of Parliament, because it just struck me that making a noise there was really what it was all about, and because I thought, being court-martialed, that it would be a good thing to air certain elements about the fighting efficiency of the Royal Air Force, the political involvement, X, Y, and Z.
Now, what height were you, would you say?
I think it's a good question. I'd have thought probably about 150 to 200 feet, turning tightly. And the intriguing thing was, obviously, to turn tightly over the Houses of Parliament, I had to put a lot of power on, which I didn't mind. And I thought that it would also be a good idea to put plenty of power on, plenty of noise. And apparently there was, because people who were in nearby buildings said that, that there was quite a noise. And the strange thing was, at that very moment in Parliament, they were discussing, without a word of a lie, the noise abatement, and to do with aircraft noise. And that was being discussed in Parliament. And the other strange thing was, to my slight annoyance, I couldn't easily see where 10 Downing Street was, because, of course, looking down and turning round there. And the other memory was, I hadn't expected Millbank Tower to be there, which was a dirty great building that was, I'd been abroad for quite a few years and elsewhere, and I hadn't realised that the Vicar's building, the Millbank Tower, was there, slightly spoiling my the turn there. And I just went round three times there, and strangely, probably partly again with a lack of sleep or something, over those last two or three days, I suddenly felt quite tired, just as I left there. But then it was quite all right. It was just an intriguing thing, whether it was a sort of business that I've got to where I want, and then I just turned downstream and made my way out over the various other bridges, the Hungerford Bridge, Waterloo Bridge, the Blackfriars Bridge, Southwark, and then just about Southwark, I was looking at St Paul's Cathedral, which had lattice work round it, and I also could see the new post office tower away on the left. And then my eyes, and there ahead, just as I was about to get to the London Bridge, was Tower Bridge, sort of staring me right in the face. And it was just an interesting target, and I hadn't meant to go through it at all, but it was just too intriguing. And I think any other pilot that was doing a lot of low-level work like we were would be fascinated. And to me, it was just an instant problem how to set about it. And I had my first couple of seconds was literally just to get down low over the water in the pool of London to study the problem, because I could then pull up if I didn't like it. And then there was a bus coming left to right, and there were obviously traffic on the bridge. And I thought, well, the only way to do it safely is to go in to do a kind of reverse bombing run on the top span. And that's what I did, because normally you're doing nap of the earth on your bombing. And it was slightly strange, but it seemed an awfully long time, that, but it was literally only two seconds decision time getting low, and it's the speed with which you could do things. And then to work out that I'd do a reverse bombing run on the top span, and that's what I did. Right at the last minute, as my cockpit canopy was going right below the bridge and the girders, there seemed to be ironwork all round me, to the left of me, to the right of me, and what's more, just right above my head, which was to be expected. And in that sort of microsecond, I remembered that I'd got a fin behind, and it was amazing the speed with which, you know, that recoil. And I thought, I'm going to lose the fin, and I'm going to have to react very quickly to bang out if necessary. But I got through all right. But the strange thing was, my heart actually stopped then. And it was just like a swash plate. There's a swash plate in a jet aircraft that sorts the fuel, and it's exactly the same way. It was like my heart starting again, because it was all pumping like mad. And it really was an intriguing event. But I think that, again, was an element later. There were about six or eight reasons that they didn't court-martial me. And but everything was safe on the bridge, apart from one cyclist that fell off with fright or something like that. And he actually, because they made a small TV thing about it, and I said it, if they could ever find this bloke, that I'd buy him a new pair of trousers, because he tore his trousers and that. And he actually rang me up. He wrote to me, and he didn't want any compensation at all. But it was all that happened 25 years later. And I just flew downstream, and up to then, it was just how to safely complete what I was doing, because I had obviously worried that there might be some elderly ladies or something like that who'd be frightened. And as soon as I'd approached London and going up the Thames, I'd done it at very low speed over the built up areas. I decided in my own mind on the way north that the way to do it was literally to fly just over 200 knots with my flap down, and the Hunter with the engine right back is very, very quiet, amazingly, at that speed. And that was how I was transiting over the houses.
So it's just over, you only really made a row over the House of Commons.
Yes, yeah, that's right.
So where from the bridge then, the Tower Bridge?
Sorry?
So where'd you go from Tower Bridge?
Oh, I kept on going downstream, which was a sensible thing to do, so I didn't cross built-up areas at all. I didn't mention that over Westminster I could see, you know, the whole of, well, not the whole of London, but a large slice of it, and could see the Buckingham Palace, which I stayed well clear of. But I could see, you know, the Mull and that, and it was really, one almost felt like Gulliver looking down at Lilliput, because in a way there was a certain parallel there too, because afterwards people could put themselves in my shoes, and the 100-odd letters I got, they were really could see what I was on about the requirement to celebrate the Royal Air Force's birthday that week. Downstream, I can remember going all the way down to Greenwich, and there was a warship just next to Greenwich there. I can't remember what it was. It looked like it looked like a frigate that was there. And then I went out and went northeast. By the time I was roughly in the sort of Hornchurch area, I didn't mention that St. Paul's, oh, well, I might have actually, was it? St. Paul's was just covered with scaffolding, which was, again, a very interesting aspect. And then I just flew north and really went over Wattisham that had been part of the background, and flew over Wattisham, Lake and Heath and Marham, but calling them all on their tower and getting clearance to overfly. And rightly or wrongly, through my head, it was lost on the ground side, I know, but I just called it, because I was one squadron, I just called it Romeo Alpha Foxtrot RAF, Romeo Alpha Foxtrot 01, and I got clearance on all of that on the way back. Marham was just before landing back at Raynham, and by that time I hadn't got that much fuel, and Marham was the only one that got a bit shirty about it. There was a victor miles out, 5.5 miles, 7 miles out on their approach or something like that, and there was no real conflict at that level. But I can remember the air traffic controller getting unnecessarily worried, and I mean I could see him, you know, and there was no danger there. And then just when I got back to West Raynham, I just did a rather inadequate, I thought, partly because I'd only got £400 left, and you weren't really supposed to do inverted flying and or steep flying with low tank contents in the Hunter, and just turned downwind and landed, and I was quite happy, you know, once I touched down, that the brake chute, you know, was bobbing around at the back, and my only worry then was that if anyone had had a heart attack at all around, and that was and the other thing that was going through my head once I left, because for once I asked the airman to take my bags and out of my aircrew bag out of the radio bay where we used to stuff it, while he was doing that, and I went back and I actually burned my map, rightly or wrongly. I borrowed some matches, and out at the back of the tactical place there, where it was really because I was rather ashamed of this tatty map, and I half thought, you know, if I was in front, I didn't want somebody to look at this tatty map that I'd used. With its sort of scribbles on it.
And what happened when you landed? Were you arrested?
Well, the first thing I did was to ring up my wife before I went up to the squadron. I went into MT section and borrowed a phone from them and told my wife's mother, I think I rang up, and said that there might be a bit of trouble, but not to worry and not to talk to the press. That was what I said to them. And then I went back into the squadron what was interesting, there was no need for me to tell them, because they knew already. And the strange thing was, when I put the call through with the MT section, the lady on the phone, who the telephonist, she said, "I don't know what on earth's happening, because I've had two lightning calls already," and that was really a kind of wartime top priority thing. And I can remember giving a dry reply. But I got my call through there and went upstairs, and there was the station commander, the wing commander flying, and Spike Jones. And the strange thing was, my boss, Spike Jones, was mildly relieved that Whitehall wasn't littered with leaflets. He was quite relieved in a funny way that I hadn't done a leaflet drop on Westminster, because I think he thought he was going to have to go down and pick them up or something. And no, they were very good, I must say. I was very impressed with the wing commander flying. I was very impressed with the station commander.
They didn't shout at you then?
No.
Did they understand what you'd done?
Well, I think in a way they probably had. But the other intriguing thing was, because the authorization sheets hadn't been signed, they were rather frothing at the bit for me to get down. They were panicking, the other three in the section about the about signing the off sheets, because in fact often that did happen when you were down the route or deployed. You theoretically took the authorization sheets and made them out before you left, but in practice sometimes, as happened there, and they thought they had their problems on this authorization bit. They were on their knees to get me to sign it, and it was really rather an amusing situation. So I did go down on that.